for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. In the late 1950s, Dubai was little more than a village. Over the years, the Middle Eastern city-state transformed itself into a major tourist and financial center. But its dream of becoming the Hong Kong or London of the Gulf region took a big hit in the past few days as news of a financial crisis emerged. Joining me in the studio to talk about Dubai's debt problems and the implications for the global economy, Desmond Lachman of the American Enterprise Institute and Ted Truman of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Joining us from a studio near Cambridge, England, Jim Crane. He's a journalist who recently spent 4.5 years on assignment in Dubai. He's also the author of a book titled City of Gold. And, of course, we welcome your calls, questions throughout the hour. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And before we begin our conversation, I'd like to welcome our new listeners at WGBH in Boston. We're delighted to have you with us, and we invite you to join the conversation. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And let me start with you, Desmond Lachman. What happened in Dubai over the weekend? Why should we care about it?
Well, I think we should care because Dubai essentially asked for a standstill in payment of its debt, that Dubai's got about $80 billion in debt outstanding, and the corporation Dubai World has got something like $60 billion in debt outstanding, and they asked their creditors for additional time to make payments. But they did it in a way that took the market somewhat by surprise. They did it a few days before religious holiday when markets were closed. So there was a great degree of confusion as to exactly what was happening. And many had assumed that the government would stand behind this company or that other countries within the Emirate, Abu Dhabi, would be there to provide assistance. And I think it came as a rude shock that, in fact, Dubai World is being allowed to essentially changed the terms of its debt. So I think in the context of the world economy right now, where there are a lot of debt problems, this had ramifications that went way beyond Dubai. You know, markets across the globe, equity markets, debt markets, they really took a bit of a beating. And some people are looking at this as a bit of a wake-up call, you know, that this crisis isn't over. There are a whole lot of other points, countries where you could be getting similar type of problems.
Possibilities. Desmond Lachman, he's a resident fellow of the American Enterprise Institute. Ted Truman, talk about the world market reaction to the debt crisis in Dubai.
Well, I think what we saw is that, as we've been seeing for the last couple of years, is that the world market is tied together. And Dubai, in part because it was played itself, trying to position itself as an international financial center, was even more so. So when something happens in a major international financial center or even a minor international financial center, it has ripples throughout the financial system around the world, which just as the crisis itself rippled around the world, and it affects the various holders of these debt, do claims on Dubai World, major banks and other institutions around the world, and so it's not a surprise that you have a hiccup or a cough or a pothole there that it has echoes elsewhere in the global financial system.
So that's how you see it, just a hiccup or a cough or a pothole. you do not see this as a major crisis.
Well, I think it's the pickup on where Desmond was. We have had a global credit boom. It ended in August of 2007. We are still playing out that that boom, and this is one of the casualties of the playing out of that boom. So Dubai, the country, and Dubai World in particular, were over-leveraged, as lots of people, lots of institutions are over-leveraged, and this is one more institution slash country that has is paying the consequences of being over-leveraged, and there will be more. Because we, I think we're through the worst of the crisis, but there will be more accidents as we go forward.
Ted Truman of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Jim Crane, there at a studio near Cambridge, England. I know you've spent a lot of time in Dubai working on your book, City of Gold. What was your reaction to this, as Ted Truman puts it, hiccup, cough, or pothole?
Well, in Dubai, it wasn't really a hiccup or a cough or a pothole. I mean, we were all shocked, us observers of Dubai, the city missed, that Dubai World missed this this payment on this $4 billion debt that was coming, or it asked for a reprieve from paying it. This was supposed to be the litmus test of Dubai's financial viability, and the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed, had assured the world that he was good for the money, that that Dubai was going to go forward, pay this debt off, that it had backing from its sister emirate. And that you know, that Dubai was going to be viable, that it would be back on its feet soon, and that it would still continue to rise as a growing financial center in the region. So we were all shocked that you know, Dubai would risk its financial reputation like this, and you know, and call for a reprieve in paying this debt.
Jim Crane, he's the author of City of Gold, Dubai and the Dream of Capitalism. He's a journalist. He was based in Dubai from 2005 to 2009. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also join us through Facebook and Twitter. So the reaction there abroad seems to be far different from the reaction here in the United States. The United Arab Emirates Central Bank did finally step in. Desmond Lachman.
Yes, they stepped in to provide liquidity, but I think that the damage was already done, that they're still going through with asking for a standstill on something like $26 billion of debt. And I would see this perhaps not so much as a pothole in the road, as more a canary in the coal mine that, you know, we've got a great degree of complacency in markets since March of 2009. We've seen equity markets on a tear. We've seen all credit spreads coming in. People are thinking that there aren't really problems around. Dubai, what it's doing now is it's concentrating attention. What we're seeing is stress now in Greece. We're seeing stress in Ireland. We're seeing the Russian corporates that are in a similar situation in terms of state guarantees. Bondholders are now beginning to wonder whether Russia would really stand behind these corporates. So I think that it could be a very good thing, that this could be really a wake-up call, that there are a lot of other ticking time bombs that could be going off, and it would be premature really to declare victory, you know, that we're out of the woods on this global crisis.
Ted Truman, let's go back a little bit. How did this crisis actually begin? All we kept hearing about Dubai was its thriving economy, its growth of all this glamour and playground for the wealthy. How did this problem begin?
Well, I think there were basically two factors. One was it had, as Desmond referred to earlier, it had a huge credit construction boom. So it is having a collapse of its, put it broadly, the commercial real estate market. And the world economy, the demand for space in Dubai did not keep up with the rate at which they were building space.
How big is Dubai?
It's a population is something over 2 million, something like that.
Yeah, it's about 2 million.
About 2 million.
And it's and it has maybe 1.6 million square miles. So, it's a pretty small place, as I said.
But you told me
it's
earlier.
It's a little bit larger than Rhode Island.
Okay, that's but right. You told me earlier that the number of construction cranes
Desmond
there,
said, it's a quarter of the ones in the total in the world. So they were, They had two things happen. One is they had a overbuilding, as has happened in just like housing here in the commercial real estate market in the United States, and the global economy slowed down, so that they make money off of the ports and so forth and so on around the world, right? And so the cash wasn't coming in. They had overcommitted themselves on the one hand, and the cash wasn't coming in as rapidly as they had expected on the other hand. And so they had trouble meeting their bills.
Desmond.
I very much agree with what Ted said, but I think that investors should have been cautious when they see an economy this size putting up a 200-story building that is the largest building in the world, when they see them creating the largest artificial lakes, when they see them creating a ski resort in the desert. You know, this is getting a little bit carried away.
Excess is what it's called. Desmond Lachman, he's resident fellow of the American Enterprise Institute. You can join the conversation, 800-433-8850. I look forward to hearing from you. And welcome back. We're talking about the financial crisis in Dubai that occurred over the weekend. There have been many resounding implications of that credit crunch that Dubai faced. Here with me in the studio, Ted Truman. He's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's a former director of the Fed Board of Governors International Finance Division. Desmond Lachman is resident fellow of the American Enterprise Institute. And on the line with us is Jim Crane. He's author of City of Gold, Dubai and the Dream of Capitalism. He's a journalist based in Dubai from 2005 to 2009, and we do invite your calls, 800-433-8850. Jim, tell us about Dubai World.
Well, Dubai World is a giant holding company that's operated or managed by the friends, I guess you could call them, of the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. It's got a number of companies under its umbrella, one of which is Dubai Ports World, the company that briefly held some U.S. ports before Congress ordered it out. It's got some investment companies that buy up foreign assets. It's got an international development arm, and it's also got a company called Nakheel, which is the main coastal developer in Dubai that's responsible for a lot of those fanciful island projects that have really caught the world's attention, for better or worse. So many of the most outrageous, if you will, developments in Dubai are being done under, or were being done under, Dubai World's aegis.
And Ted, just how transparent have all of these operations actually been?
Well, that's part of the regional dimension of this issue, it seems, as I see it. This is a young country, as you said earlier, right? It doesn't necessarily operate by the standards that we in the West expect financial markets to operate under. And so there is not the same level of transparency in that part of the world in their company operations and then their investment arms. So, for example, ISMAR, this sovereign wealth fund, which is under Dubai World, in my scoring of sovereign wealth funds, it's sort of at the bottom. It tells you very little in a systematic way about what it's doing. People know about some of its investments, including some important pieces of real estate in the United States, a piece of Barney's, for example. But they don't sort of systematically lay out their accounts. And that's characteristic of many of these quasi-public institutions in that part of the world, because they standards of transparency are not the same as the ones that we, anyhow, are used to, for better
or
for worse.
But, Desmond, given that lack of transparency, how is it that you had savvy investment companies in Europe and elsewhere just taken in?
Well, that's hardly an exception. You know, we've just gone through a period in which we've just had a global crisis in which literally trillions of dollars of bank losses are being made on subprime mortgages, all sorts of loans, you know, where there also wasn't very much in the way of transparency. So I think when the times are good, when times are rolling, this is historically the case. You know, people will let their imaginations run away with them and get involved in all sorts of projects that they shouldn't do. One of the aspects of this crisis that could have ramifications globally is that Dubai World holds properties abroad, and they might be forced to sell properties, you know, some of their properties, you know, particularly in the UK, which would then add pressure to the commercial property market in the UK and the US. So, you know, that's another feature of this Dubai crisis that is catching people's attention.
Catching people's attention, and yet, considering everything all of you have said about the youth of the country, the excessive grandeur of the construction projects, why was the Dubai World meltdown a surprise?
Right, it certainly should not have been a surprise once the global economy went into the contraction that it did, once there were problems elsewhere. You know, that I think that this is really very much an aftershock. But by the time one realized it, it's too late. You know, the projects were underway, the loans had been made. You know, and I think that now we're just reaping the consequences a little bit later down the crisis. I think that, you know, something that Ted alluded to is that certain things still have to play out in this economic crisis, and Dubai World was one of them.
Jim Crane, I know you wanted to get in on that.
Yeah, well, I think it was a shock to the banks that lent a lot of this money in one way, because I think they were under the assumption that they were lending to a state entity, and therefore that this debt was it could be assumed as sovereign debt, that the government of Dubai was going to stand behind it, and then when the government didn't stand behind it, when it seemingly allowed this state corporation to twist in the wind, if you will, allowing bringing up the specter of default, they were fairly shocked. I mean, I think all the ratings on these companies were all based on the fact that they were linked to the government, that the government could be counted on to bail them out. And if Dubai couldn't afford to bail them out, well, you know, the Sheikh Mohammed's cousins in Abu Dhabi, where all the money is and all the oil is in the United Arab Emirates, these guys in Abu Dhabi would step in and save the day. Now, that still might happen, but I think there were some misconceptions between the creditors and the borrowers that led to this crisis. That's one of the main kernels of what's going on here and why this thing blew up so big.
What happened to all the money in the Gulf, Ted?
Well, there's still a lot of money in the Gulf, but the point I think about Dubai itself is that it was living off of that money. It didn't generate that much of its own money. It did some. Its port activities were very profitable, but it was in many of its development activities of Dubai was living off of money that came from elsewhere. So as Jim said, I think correctly, there was the presumption that the government of Dubai would stand behind Dubai World, and there was a presumption that the Abu Dhabi, the wealthiest of the Emirates, would stand by the government of Dubai as part of the same country, federation. And that assumption has collapsed. I think probably on the part of Dubai's case, they actually don't have the money, right? So why? And it sounds like their cousins, at least in the short run, although they provided them some money over the last year, there have been various support operations over the last years. That, in that sense, this was not a complete surprise. There were some support operations, and therefore people said there would be continue to be support operations. So that was the link that was made, and it looks like, at least in the short run, that the banker in Abu Dhabi said, we're not going to write you a blank check. And therefore, the government of Dubai said, well, I guess we're going to have to renegotiate our debts. And they behaved just like every other government who's defaulted on their debt, right? Up until the last day, you don't say you're about to default. You surprise the market. That's what's required of all presidents and finance ministers.
All right. So going back to what you said earlier, Desmond Lachman, that you see Dubai as a kind of canary in the coal mine. What does that mean? Could Dubai become another Iceland, for example, defaulting and continuing to default and thereby having to rethink, restructure its entire financial system?
Right. When I was saying that Dubai might be the canary in the coal mine, I was referring to many other countries where their financial problems of similar magnitude, of greater importance than Dubai. You know, one's only got to look at the situation in places like Greece, in Ireland, in Spain. You look at the Baltic countries.
You're suggesting they're teetering.
Yes. Well, basically, they've got very serious problems, serious fundamental problems that are now being papered over by a huge amount of liquidity in the markets, by a huge amount of complacency. And I think when the history of this period is written, it could very well look like the same story with Iceland just being the first to go, and then the focus being, in Iceland's case, it was followed by countries like Hungary, Ukraine, and so on, all getting into trouble. What we're seeing right now is markets are beginning to get a whiff of this. You're seeing, for instance, just to mention a specific example, Greece's debt now is trading at worse levels than Turkey's, which certainly is going to be problematic for Greece, just from a point of view of national pride. But it's an indication that Greece is being put into the same category as a country that has had a lot of debt problems in the past. And I'm afraid that this is what the problems in Dubai could be a harbinger of.
Ted Truman, do you agree with her?
I think that's right. I mean, I think I like the image of aftershock better than the image of canary in the coal mine, because I think we've had a global crisis, economic and financial crisis, right? And there will be a number of aftershocks. I think we're through.
But how serious will those aftershocks be?
Well, they will be sufficiently serious so that the global economy, every aspect of the global economy, is not going to bounce back to where it was in 2006 overnight. And so it will be a drag.
Nobody is really expecting the world economy to bounce back overnight. What I hear Desmond Lachman saying is that what you've got is a far more serious situation impending around the world that could once again affect the U.S. markets and take us into what people worry about, a double recession.
I think that's that probably is the point at which Desmond and I don't have full of 100% agreement on. I think it is unlikely that this event and similar events, which I expect, even though I'm not prepared to predict them, but I think there will be similar events, it's unlikely that they're going to be another big leg down, right, and by themselves to drag the global economy back into recession. Right. It will slow the recovery, right? And it will mean that we'll have a long period of relatively slow growth. But I don't think you're gonna go off another cliff the way we did a year ago.
Ted Truman of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. It's time to open the phones. Let's hear what listeners have to say. 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. First to Rochester, New York. Good morning, Keith. Go right ahead.
Yes. China recently told world banks not to extend undue credit, and your guests have been listing countries that are themselves very much overextended. And the Chinese president recently told to his face our President Obama about his concerns about our drastic overspending. My twofold question, how do we have the world economy come back when there is noticeable excess capacity? By example, Wall Street is not the economy. It is Main Street. That is what we should be concentrating on. And secondly, lo and behold, are the red Chinese becoming the true responsible capitalists around the world, saying exactly that, that spending all the way around has gotten out of order and we've got to get our house of credit back in line so that we are spending and saving responsibly.
All right, Keith, thanks for your call. Desmond Lachman.
Right. The Chinese might have some case in indicating that the United States public finances look on a very bad path that could lead us to trouble. But it's a little surprising coming from the Chinese, you know, because the Chinese engaged in a fiscal stimulus package that was many times the size of that of the United States. And what the Chinese are doing is they're behaving in a way that isn't conducive to restoring global imbalance. What they're doing is they're increasing the size of their excess capacity in a whole range of industries at a time that the world is in really bad shape. I think that what they're doing is they're just trying to score a lot of political points with the United States, and my view is that they're not being serious partners in trying to resolve this global crisis.
Is there a relationship between China and Dubai, Ted Truman?
Well, there's a relationship in the sense that we're all in the same boat, and China is in the same boat with us as well, and we're in the same boat with Dubai. And the problem of global capital flows, which is basically what we're talking about, and Keith said, talked about at the beginning of his question, is a general problem. So it affects, so money, if you want to put it that way, sloshed into Dubai, right? It's now sloshing into China. It's causing all kinds of problems for China because of their exchange rate policy. They're sort of trying to block that, and so they're building up their foreign exchange reserves. And I very much agree with Desmond's point about the excess capacity. So the place where there's probably more excess capacity than anywhere else in the world in many industries today is in China. And the demand for, and what they're looking for is for us to provide the demand for that supply that they're producing. And that's where the exchange rate issue comes into play. They have to have more reliance on their domestic demand.
So is China becoming the center of capitalism in a new way, Desmond?
No, I think that that's a stretch. You know, to think that China is becoming capitalist, you know, that they're as interventionist as ever, and I think that they're really running their policies in a way that's not really in their long-run interest. You know, what Ted is alluding to, the way in which they're intervening in their exchange market, the way in which they're not encouraging consumption, all of this is going to make life very difficult for China, because what China's going to want to do is export all of its excess production to Europe and the United States. When Europe and the United States are in the middle of recession with very high unemployment, that is bound to lead to a protectionist backlash.
Desmond Lachman, he's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. More of your calls, your emails when we return. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. And by Vicky and Roger Sant and Island Press, which provides solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. This is NPR.
President Obama's mother spent 14 years studying village industries in remote areas of Indonesia. His half-sister reflects on their mother's life, legacy, and recently published 1992 doctoral dissertation, The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And just before the break, we were talking about China and its relationship to what's happening in Dubai. Jim Crane, I know you wanted to make a point.
Well, it was less about China, although there are some direct connections. I mean, there are a lot of Chinese laborers now working in the construction industry in Dubai. Dubai is increasingly importing cranes and construction equipment from China because the rest of the world seem to have run out of spare equipment. And also, it's investing more in China and vice versa, because it seems to have been pushed that way after the Dubai Ports World frenzy that you might remember from in 2006, when Dubai was asked to leave to sell its investments in the U.S. It thought that that China and Asia in general was perhaps a more reliable investment partner. So it made an effort to do some deals there. But I wanted to talk a bit about the run-up to this crisis.
Sure.
And the mentality that was at play in Dubai.
Sure.
And how we kind of got where we are now. If you take yourself back to this six-year boom and the point in 2002, when Sheikh Mohammed, the ruler of Dubai, opened the real estate market to foreign buyers. This was an incredibly risky move that really paid off. No one knew that there was so much pent up demand for real estate in Dubai. I mean, it's a city that's about 95% made up of expatriates, and none of the expatriates were allowed to own property. And so it released this huge amount of demand, and Dubai literally could not build property fast enough. You know, after importing all the idle construction equipment from all of Europe and having about between 10% and 20% of the world's construction cranes, it still could not meet demand. I mean, there were 2,500 people a day showing up at the airport with their bags. Wow. Looking for apartments to move in. And it just reached a point of saturation where it was building as fast as it could. It imported labor from all around South Asia, and it could not construct fast enough. And meanwhile, everything it did build, the prices just shot up overnight. I mean, the prices were changing by the hour at some point. During points of this boom, and it was the crazier the ideas that they ruled out. The Palm Islands, the apartments and homes on there got snapped up and resold and sold again and driven up to five times their sale value before there was even any land there. I mean, while it was still, these properties were theoretical homes that were, still really, it was open sea.
And Jim, just to follow up on your points, here's an email from Mike in Boston, who's listening on our new affiliate, WGBH. He says, isn't this all about the ruler of Dubai's overwhelming ego to build a great business coming down to earth like any number of former Wall Street tycoons? What do you think of that, Jim?
Yeah, I would say he's got a point. The ruler of Dubai, his mantra through all this has been, no matter how far Dubai gets, this is only 10% of my vision for Dubai. So, his vision is to reconstruct another Cordoba, a 10th century Cordoba in what's now Spain, was a Muslim-ruled city that was a center of learning. It was the largest city in Europe at the time, with the most universities. It was a place of religious tolerance where Christians and Jews and Muslims all studied, in together, engaged in research. And he likes that idea for Dubai, with a financial component. He also wants it to be, first of all, he wants it to become the financial center for this underserved quarter of the globe between Singapore and Frankfurt. It now doesn't have a financial center. And
all right.
After that, he'd like it to rival New York and London.
All right, let's go back to the phones and hear Ralph's point. He's in Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning, Ralph. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi there.
I guess my point is the financial markets are looking pretty good today. There was a 150-point drop the other day, 154, actually. When this happened, relatives and neighbors and family that they have in Abu Dhabi could easily, at the push of a button, fix this. It just seems to me a little bit today that I'm mildly disappointed. It seems that your show's not as objective, I don't think, as usual, or you are. You seem to be siding with the commenter that's fear-mongering, for lack of a better word. Thanks. I'll hang up and take my comments off the air.
All right. I appreciate your call, Ralph. Fear-mongering, Desmond, what do you think? Creating too much of a negativity out of what's happening there.
Well, I think that mistakes that we've made in the past have been to ignore problems and pretend that they're not there, only to be surprised and then react in too late a manner. When we do look at countries like Greece or Ireland or Spain or Portugal, by any standard economic measure, these countries have got enormous imbalances that are going to be very difficult to correct. We're talking about huge budget deficits that need to be financed. to take that for granted would be a great mistake. You know, I think that those problems really need to be addressed, and the intention isn't to say that the world is coming to an end. It's a question to say that the real problems that need to be addressed
are still
with real
there.
Measures. Absolutely.
Ted Truman.
I agree with that. I mean, I think in the sense that I don't think we're promoting fear. I'm saying that we don't have clear sailing, right? It's the part of the lesson which is part of the debate in the world today. At what point do the extraordinary measures, fiscal, monetary interventions in financial systems that many countries around the world have been able to do, at what point do you turn them off or turn them back? I think the world is still quite fragile, and it's part of that debate about, as they call it, the exit strategy, and it's too soon to say it's all over and we can go back to partying.
Here's an email from Matt in Indianapolis. He says, my wife and I went on vacation and to run a marathon in Dubai in January 2008. We had a great time. People were friendly, enjoyed the relatively cheap shopping, marveled at all the development. But the biggest thing we walked away with was how unsustainable it appeared. All the workers we saw were foreign. All the development was driven by non-residents. Most condos, homes were vacant most of the year after they were built. If we saw this so clearly, how was this missed by so many smart people when the bubble burst for most places in the fall of 2008? Jim Crane.
Well, I would agree with his point that Dubai is unsustainable. The amount of housing there now looks excessive, and there's about 30,000 more units that are still theoretically under construction that still haven't come to market yet, which could really damage the market there oversaturate the market for years to come.
Interesting.
But the really unsustainable part of Dubai, I think, is environmentally unsustainable. I mean, they've built these glass-skinned skyscrapers with no thought to the amount of energy they consume. I mean, the city is designed on this kind of 1970s Los Angeles model that, just wastes energy wholesale. And now they've come to the point where they can't actually supply it with enough. They can't find enough natural gas to generate enough electricity to keep the place running. Each person there consumes about twice as much. They emit about twice as much carbon as a person in Europe.
All right. Let me follow with a question from Hamza, who's in Ann Arbor, Jim. He says, I was wondering if you could ask if the recent financial collapse in Dubai is going to disrupt the new Tiger Woods golf resort that's being built there. Tiger's going through a lot this week, so I'm wondering if this other news is going to have an impact on him as well. What do you think, Jim?
Well, the Tiger Woods golf course, yes, has already been put on hold. It was put on hold last year. It's part of this giant Dubai land development, another unsustainable project. It was meant to be an amusement zone of hotels and resorts that was to be as big as Orlando itself. So most of that, if not, the 5/6 of Dubai land has been put on hold or canceled, and Tiger Woods golf course appears to be one of those projects that's just not going forward right now.
One caller we've had worked in Dubai as an architect. He says people are living, spending in Dubai. Were the people building in Dubai, once it dropped down to normal levels, there was no one left to buy. People don't want to live there. They want to earn money there. And another caller says there's animosity between Abu Dhabi and Dubai. There's resentment between the two cities, and that's why they're so reluctant to help their cousins up north. Desmond.
Right. I think that there's got to be some truth to that, that Abu Dhabi certainly has the wherewithal to bail out Dubai if it wanted to, and it appears that they're waiting, they going to be exerting terms, exacting a price for any kind of support that they provide to Dubai.
What kind of terms, Ted Truman?
Well, I think, I mean, this is, let's put it in American terms, right? So it's a question of whether New York, probably not the best example, wants to bail out California. When California gets into debt problems. So there is a certain rivalry between, say, New York and California, or Texas probably is a better example in California. And so why should they write a check, right, to and send it to California when California, in the view of Texas, has been excessive in their plans and overly profligate in using their money.
All right, let's take a caller in Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning, Thomas. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi there.
My son and his wife taught college in Zayed University in both Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and we've been over three times. And it was nothing but a Florida condo speculation just on a gigantic scale. I mean, in Florida, people were walking away from $50,000 earnest money if they were the last flippy, and that was what was happening there. It was just all fueled speculation, and it's sad because it was spectacular, but it just there was no way of keeping it going.
Do you agree with that, Ted Kramer?
Well, I think it certainly, I haven't actually been there, so the caller has an advantage over me, but it certainly had that flavor of it. That and Florida's probably a pretty good example of where you had much of the same kind of, and other vacation spots, same kind of Arizona, Las Vegas, where you've had the same kind of problems.
Ted Truman of the Peterson Institute, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And here's an email from Nancy in Cincinnati. She says, what will this problem in Dubai, what effect will this problem have on the U.S. financial market? Are there any particular banks that could be affected? Desmond.
No, my understanding is that the banks that have got the most exposure to Dubai are the ones in Europe, and in particular, the ones in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom banks, we're talking about banks like HSBC, Standard Chartered, those banks have got something like $50 billion outstanding to Dubai. So it might have relevance for a handful of banks in Europe. My understanding is that United States banks are not really involved, so I don't think that there's any reason to be concerned about a direct hit to the United States financial markets.
All right, and finally to Kevin, who's been waiting for quite a while. You're in Ocean City, New Jersey. Kevin, go right ahead.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
The prior conversation just struck me as about potholes and that, and it just seems like it was shaded towards the more positive side. Is there a reason for that? And does your guest have an interest in showing a positive light on it?
That's very interesting, because earlier we were, a caller said perhaps we were doing a little fear-mongering here, and now, Ted Truman, you had used the word potholes, or
yes.
You trying
well,
to
I,
put
I,
too
positive
spin.
I was trying to put things in a little bit of a context. I think this is certainly serious for Dubai. I think it is probably somewhat serious for the Middle East. But in the global scheme of things, it's probably just one more aftershock from the global crisis we've been through.
So you see it as contained within the Middle East, whereas you, Desmond, see the shockwaves around the world.
Well, I see Dubai itself is going to be contained. I think that this will pass over. But what it's doing is it's drawing our attention to other problems that I think are a lot more serious. I'm particularly concerned about economies like the Spanish economy, which is a very large economy that's got similar kind of problems to Dubai. And I think that this really should have been a wake-up call as to what might occur in Europe in next year.
Ted Truman, a wake-up call?
Well, I think quick. I'm not going to go that far, quite frankly. I think things are gradually getting better. I think a number of countries and a number of companies around the world will continue to have problems. And so in that sense, I'm not surprised. So that's my...
But you don't see other countries falling?
No, I wouldn't predict that there's not going to be country problems. And there are a couple, for example, in Latin America. You have Venezuela, you have Argentina, you have Mexico even, which have their own problems. So there are other problems around the world without even going to Europe.
Ted Truman of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Desmond Lachman, he's resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. And from a studio near Cambridge, England, Jim Crane. He's a journalist who spent numerous years in Dubai. His book is titled City of Gold. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.